You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and you know it must get done, it will get done because you'll do it. You ain't going to procrastinate. You ain't going to put it off. You're going to do it. I say. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. There will be programs that are dated and titled. Appreciate my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Updated programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here, we're going to go through that. I'm not going to make announcements. I have an outstanding guest today. So, but this program, once again, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times that are going to give our Eastern times. Tomorrow, Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Africans on the Move. No, it's not Africans on the Move. It's the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club in Jackson, Mississippi. Africans on, that's right, the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move. 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tomorrow at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. And Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We're going to go right to the Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. August. November 12th. Have courage. Timidity and cowardice are for men who can see safety at their backs or retreat without molestation and find refuge in the familiar fields of their native lands. But they are not for you. You must be brave. Hannibal Barca. Believe it or not, there are individuals in the conscious community with war constantly on their lips who have no weapons or immediate access to them, who have compliments and children who are without felony convictions. This makes no sense. No African sense, especially knowing that war is being waged against us and that genocide has been at our door. In fact, that it has opened up, it has opened it with treasonous keys. This makes no sense, period, except as a mentalcidal contradiction. Affirm, I am brave. Affirm, I am brave. November 13th. The most reliable way to predict and anticipate current and or future behaviors and relationships is to study and scrutinize past behaviors. Being historically conscious and cognizant of what is going on around us now and linking that with the previous behaviors gives us a more grounded view of reality. That way, we readily avoid falling for the proverbial okey-doke, okay? Junius Ricardo Stanton. Our children's sanity must be protected from the Europeans' racial hostilities. The esteem they bring into this world through the divine African womb has to be systematically cultivated and strengthened in this anti-African reality. Of course, in order to effectively do this, we have to know history, our history, and the cultural patterns and social trajectories which necessarily ensues from it. We must know the mind of those who seek to dehumanize us as well as our timeless efforts to be human, to be African. It is the work of all of us to be and socialize our children into being African. We must protect their minds from the violence of the white mind or lose their minds to that madness. Affirm, I study the past in order to correctly nation build the future. Affirm, I study the past in order to correctly nation build the future, brothers and sisters. The Inya Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, I had this brother on the program a couple times before, but it's always an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to have my good brother, Dr. Heru Septepenra, with us. Brother Dr. Heru, what's up?
You, something as me, Baba, what's good?
No, well, I tell you what's good, man. It's the things that are happening and that we're trying to make some connections with and trying to influence and try to, put that motion in the direction of our path to independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as a people. That's the path that we're on.
I receive that, but if I may, in the tradition of which you so eloquently and greatly do every time you go on the show, is honor the ancestors and having us remember those that know me. Every day I give homage to those ancestors that have meaning that it basically keeps us driven and going. So if I may, I'm sitting here looking at Baba Baruti's first volume one. And I'm just going to read the quote from the late, great Benson Harding, you know, that African who used Christianity as a tool of liberation, who was a close colleague of Martin Luther King Jr., who basically was one of the founders of the Institute of the Black World. I just use this quote for today. Abuobo 13, November 13th, he says, systems do not exist apart from individuals. They are indeed the creation an expression of men and women. Now, I only said that because I don't even want to go a little bit too far to the left. We use that to make us think about from November 5th moving backwards, that these systems that we are basically dealing with, that we have been dealing with it from an oppressive system, has to do with individuals who made their mind up, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll have more on that. We'll get to build on that. All now, right. I want to honor two ancestors who were born today, Baba.
I say.
First one is Hampton Halls. Hampton Halls was born on this day in 1928 in the City of Angels, Los Angeles. Who is Hampton Halls? This ancestor now was an exceptional jazz pianist during the bebop and hard bop era. Many would argue, in terms of his skill set, he was second only to Oscar Peterson. I don't get in that battle. I haven't chosen an instrument yet, but they say he was fierce with it. Halls wrote his own book, his own memoir in 1974 called Raise Up Off Me. And what's really interesting about him, his life was cut short. Like many of our masters of the musicians, because they tap in so high into the seven circuits of their brain, they have to have outlets, and usually those outlets have come in the form of drugs, right? And so Halls was basically real heavy on the heroin, to the point that he got incarcerated. Mm. But it was through John F. Kennedy in 1963 gave him an executive pardon, right? Mm. So he was able to come on out, continue to do his work. Now, it cut his jazz career short, but he ended up transitioning, and he left us at 48 years young. Nevertheless, for the work that he did when he was here, check him out, read the book, check out what he did musically, but he was fierce with it. Can we get an Ashe?
Ashe. Ashe, Ashe.
It must be all about this music today, because our second and our last ancestor, Idris Muhammad, born Leo Morris.
Yeah, Idris
His
Muhammad.
Earth Day was on this day. All Come right. on now, Baba. Right. His Earth Day was today in 1939, and NOLA, or those who are from that Nolens, right?
Nolens,
he was from Nolens. This is a jazz master drummer.
Yes.
He was a band leader.
Mm-hmm.
He recorded with the likes of Ahmad Jamal,
mm-hmm.
Lou Donaldson, who just became a recent ancestor day before yesterday, Pharoah Sanders, Het Motolu, and Reggie Workman. Now, what I love about how we're getting together today on, like, we got business, we got work to do mm-hmm. from November 6th on. We got work to do because Idris Muhammad's first album, brother, in 1970, it was entitled Black Rhythm Revolution.
Mm.
About that. And his last album that he recorded, which was in 1998, the title was Right Now.
Right now.
So when we gonna get busy, Bob?
Right now.
Right now.
Yes, right
sir.
Now.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, family.
Well, that's in keeping in line with our break time. Once we come to the top of the hour, I'm going to introduce many people to Brother Roy Haynes. Roy Haynes, who died yesterday, born in Boston, Massachusetts, March 13th, 1925. He died at 99 years old and died. He drummed all the way to the time he passed. He was active from 1942 to 1924. Roy Haynes, and we'll hear a little bit of that at the break. So it's in keeping with what we're talking about. Ashe, jazz drummer. Over 600, he's on over 600 recordings. So he was busy.
Mm.
He was busy. And of course he played with the likes of the greatest of the greats of jazz of our era. So, yeah. All right, family. You know,
I'm ready, Baba.
I'm ready. We definitely ready now, man. Yeah, I tell you. We have ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, the organization I've been involved in for a long time, and have a lot of respect for. Wish I would have had the opportunity and knowledge of at the time, and I think it was 86, they went to Kemet, hundreds of us. I know some people who did go, you know, and... And they descended upon Kemet, you know. You see, I'm this way, Baba. I'm this way, brother. I'm with this way, Doc. If I'm talking about us in Africa and in the northeast corner of Africa has one of the greatest civilizations on the planet, I'm talking about Kemet. But if I'm talking about more contemporary time, and the people who are there now who want to steal our legacy, I'm talking about Egypt. You see? So I make a distinction between the two, you know, because the Egyptians, that's just like an Egyptologist and a Kemetologist. An Egyptologist, that individual is looking at even though he may be looking at antiquity, he still wants to put it in the image of white people, just like they do in the movies. You see movies made from Hollywood even to this very day, even though we must give Dr. Sheikh Andre Diop and Dr. Thelafingia Obinga their love and props. Thelafingia Obinga. I'm having a hard time saying his name, family.
I got you, Bob. I'm going to let you get it out, Bob.
Okay.
Do your thing.
All right. Those two brothers in 1974 argued so persuasively at that symposium, and they were the only two Africans. Everybody else was either European or people from the area, North Africa, because it was, we know that North Africa was Islam. When Islam came on the scene, just swept across North Africa and occupy it to this day. But when they debated at that symposium in 74, I think what was the key was the melanin dosage test. Because you can say some things and, okay, you know, what really going to back that up? Well, when Dr. Jopp came up with the melanin dosage test, where you could take some of the mummies and extract melanin from them, look under the microscope, and you could see the concentrations of it, no doubt, they were African. They were black. No doubt, you see. And so he was able to do that. So he argued persuasively. But yet and still, brother, to this day, National Geographic, the Learning Channel, the Discovery Channel, PBS, and every damn thing else, cartoons and all that shit, still, when they're talking about Egypt, people look Caucasian. People look white. Because, and then the kick, of course, always, if they show somebody serving somebody, they're going to look exactly, you're right, African or black. Because they want to do is to consistently put into your mind that you ain't never been nothing but a servant. You ain't never been nothing but a slave. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. And that's why ASCAC is necessary. That's why those of us, because we need to reclaim and recapture, restore the history of our people. And that is a glorious history, because that is a foundational history and civilization for the world. Nobody wasn't doing shit before we did it. There's nothing recorded of significance. There's some contemporary, there's Sumerians and so forth, but it is us. It is Kemet. You know,
it's beautiful. I love the way you're building this up. Mm-hmm. And when you allow me, Elder, just unleash me.
Oh boy,
just unleash me. When you ready? You setting it up, brother.
Yeah.
Just unleash me. Tell me, Baba.
I'm gonna tell you, family.
You gotta give me permission to speak.
I'm
gonna tell you. Give it to me. It's on.
I'm gonna tell you, family. Strap yourself in. Hold on to your hats. But more importantly, open your minds and your hearts. My dear brother, Dr. Heru Septepera.
Thank you so much, family. I appreciate you, Baba. You know, in the tradition of being Africans, before I really get busy and get to talking, and please feel free to chime in, whatever, but I must be able to give you your salute, Elder. You are what we call in Africana circles, a long distance runner. This is what we call it. You are a long distance runner. How do I know that? When I first met you several years ago, I just watch, you know, I watch and I listen when I'm around my elders. And I remember you dropped the name on me and I kept my mouth closed because I got so fired up. I said, oh yeah, I got to talk to him on a sidebar. When you start shooting at me, like you, we was a colleague and you knew James Herbert Cameron. I said, well, hold up. Mm-hmm. You knew James Herbert Cameron.
Yes,
we're talking about that African who was 16 years old.
Yes, sir.
In Marion, Indiana.
Yes, sir.
When his two brothers, Thomas Shipp and Abram
Smith,
was lynched.
Yes.
All three of them. Listen.
Yes.
Listen now. All three of them were being lynched.
Yes.
The other two Africans expired and became ancestors. The baby.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Cameron had the noose around his neck.
That's right.
They end up taking him off him and put him on the court, told him he was an accessory, and gave him 5 years. He did 5 years in prison. As he's in prison, he's thinking how he's going to write this book. So what happens when he gets out? Before he bounces and goes to Milwaukee, what he does is he goes back to the community,
mm-hmm.
and he interviews mm-hmm. everybody who saw it.
That's right.
All the Africans he saw it. Then he bounced to that old racist place called Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
I say,
you know this is a gangster. he almost lost his life, and he said, "No, I need to go where I need to go." So what does he do? James Herbert Cameron goes there, and his brother starts kicking up dust. He founded NAAC chapters in mm-hmm. Madison, Wisconsin, in Muncie, Indiana, and right around the corner from the crib from Gary, South Bend, Indiana. But he wasn't done, because it's 40 years ago to this date, or this year, that he actually founded the Black Holocaust Museum.
Yes, sir.
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now,
yes,
I'm only
sir.
Bringing that up to let you know who I'm on the phone with and who I'm dealing with. Yes, I know who you are, Baba. You're a long-distance runner, so I wanted to give you your flowers, black man.
Oh,
as I move forward.
Thank you, brother.
As I move forward, I got to give a quick shout-out to my young warrior by the name of Kane. Kane ain't no game. That's one of them young warriors. If I call him, no matter what the deal is, he comes to the assignment. Last night, I went to go see my two grandbabies. And they mama, who's my adopted daughter, she said, "Hey, my car ain't running." So I went up there. She had the car in the wrong way. I said, "Man, how we going to do this?" I said, "Baby, you're going to have to wait till the morning so I can get longer cables." Mm-hmm. I said, "Oh, no, let me call Kane." I called Kane. Kane like, "Yo, I can come right now, Baba." I said, "No, I got to be somewhere. I got to be back at home by 9 o'clock. I can't do it. It's 5:45 in the morning. I got you, Baba." Mm. Kane beat me at the house and was waiting at 5:45 this morning to make sure that my babies had their car so they can get off to school.
I
salute you, warrior.
Yes, sir.
We just getting started, Kane.
Hey,
listen, he's gonna be one of the presenters at ASCAT 2025.
Yes.
So, oh, y'all just wait, family. So I had to give him a salute. I also want to give a salute to my ASCAT family, the Southern Regional Conference. I'm on the planning committee. Our sister, Dr. Reba Kelsey, is the president.
Yes.
She won't be with us on Friday.
Okay.
She'll be where she grew up in Columbus, Ohio, giving honor to the great Tony West, that master drummer who became an ancestor last Saturday at 12:07 a.m. Can we get an ashe?
Ashe.
I want to give a shout out to my Nubian family. That's Sister Prof. Karen Hunter and one of my Jekners and my brother and colleague, Greg Kamathi Carr, along with Brother Urias and my sister Suyana Ahmed and my brother Mario Beatty and so many others. We like 10,000 strong.
Ask-cat.
We didn't broke the motherfucking university. We didn't broke it. check out Narrative with a K, family. Narrative. Put a K in front of the word narrative.com. Check it out and become a member. Then download your Nubian app with a K. Nubia. Then become a Nubian, and you will see exactly what I mean. So big love to my Nubian family.
Yes.
And last but not least, I got to holler at my brothers, the brothers who pulled me in. It was like yesterday, and I remember when my brother attorney, Mwali Davis, from my fellow brother from Chicago, I called him the Johnny Cochran of the South.
That's right.
This brother called me and said, "Hey, man," or sent me a text message and said, "Listen, the board talked about they want you to be part of this committee or whatever." Ever since then, we've been rocking and rolling. We just got off of a 13-city tour throughout the state of Georgia. We went down in the sticks.
Yes, sir.
We was in Bronze. We went to Savannah. We didn't been Statesboro. We didn't been all. So I've had some soldiers, some warriors with me. Brother Marty Monaghan, who is the director of the Black Man Lab. I had my brothers Quaylen Bobbitt and Ta'Cory Thomas. Those are our drivers. And Ta'Cory was the video man, but it wouldn't have been nothing without my man Dre Nitty, who does the boxing, my brother Jay White, and myself. We was rolling. We had a couple other brothers go with us, Phil. We had Brother Isina, we would see a couple times, but those are my warriors, and we made it happen, man. So I salute you, brothers, and I appreciate you. Now I can get busy.
I say. Well, let me just quickly
talk about
say, let,
yes,
let me
sir.
Just quickly
Come on,
say
boy,
about my brother Molly Davis, man, because
come on
when,
now. Come
when
on
I,
with
when,
it.
When I came here, I had met him prior to with through Conrad War Worrell, and Conrad Worrell, he is Molly is his grandfather. I mean, excuse me, his man. Come on, Oshie. His father.
Him is his godfather.
His godfather.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And they're real close out of Chicago because his father played ball. His father played with the Globetrotters, Mel Davis.
Mm.
You know, there's much love and much respect for Molly Davis and all that he does there with the Black Men's Lab and so forth and so on, man. So, man, good props.
All
right. All right.
No, no, that's beautiful, Baba. So if I may, thank you for that. And for all that know, we're at our new location at Black Man's Lab. We're at, it's called Junction 28. The beautiful sister there opened up the space for us.
Oh, you're not?
It's called Junction.
So
we'll be coming back and forth to the YMCA when we do special occasions or what have you. But our new location now is 2800 Campbellton Road, Southwest.
Okay.
That's ATL, and the zip is 30331. And you can't miss it. You'll see it. You'll see it say Junction 2800. It looks like a car lot. You'll have the gate and everything. It'll be open or either open or closed. That's where we meet. Mm-hmm. We're going to be there every Monday from 6:30 to 8:30. You get there a little bit early. We're always feeding. We're always feeding our brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's
next
right.
door is our sisters.
That's
so
right.
For any brothers or any sisters that want to bring their children or they want to be there, right next door is our sisters with the Black Women's Lab.
Right.
So that's every Monday we've been doing it. It's been fire these last 2 weeks. So
man.
I wanted to hit that plug. But you spoke on Ask That, and you dropped the name on me, Conrad Rowell.
Yes, sir.
So I was able to sit at the feet of this Baba. My sister, Valethia Watkins,
yes,
and Mario Beatty, mm-hmm, opened their home to me when I was a Cornell grad student because I had to sit at the feet of the masters or whatever. So I had an isolated conversation with Conrad Rowell, and he educated me to say, you know, he was the last of the, I would call the OGs of that Chicago group,
yes,
of the Center of Inner City Studies. So
yes.
He interviewed and he broke down the history to
Baba
me,
Jake.
How he interviewed,
mm-hmm,
how he interviewed with this other individual, and they interviewed and they went down to the wire, and Baba Jacob Carruthers and Anderson Thompson,
mm-hmm,
and the other one, they chose,
yes,
Conrad Rowell. Where that other individual, we didn't lose him at all. We didn't lose him at all. His government name is Joseph Baldwin. He went right across the street from Florida State University. He went to FAMU and became one of our master teachers, African-centered psychologist, by the name of who?
Kobe Cambone, yes, sir.
Kobe Cambone was fighting, mm-hmm, it out in terms of getting that job. So we didn't lose anything because we had him in the Deep South doing that work. And we had Baba Conrad Rowell basically being there. But let me get to Ask That. See, you dropped the name, sir.
Name dropping
in terms
here.
Of this work.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you laid this thing out. And when you spoke about, we can't talk about Ask That without talking about two names. One is Joseph Alfredo Antonio Benyakinen, better known as Dr. Ben, commonly known. And I bring him up because, mm-hmm, it was his ancestral words on the printed page through his book, Black Man of the Now, is what brought me into consciousness.
Mm.
I didn't know if I was coming or going. And I have to bring up Doc Ben before I bring up Jope, because Doc Ben is the African who is responsible largely for bringing Africans in the Western hemisphere into the consciousness, mm-hmm, of classical African civilizations. Let's be clear about that. Doc Ben wrote We the Black Jews in Spanish first.
Mm.
In 1939, let's be clear. He was doing this work when others wasn't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But see, he's always been on that front line. Doc Ben has always been on that front line. So he's the one that got us to be able to consider that these classical African civilizations were African through and through, phenotypically,
yes,
and culturally and otherwise.
Right.
But it was through this Sheikh Antijope, who comes from a family of jollies, without using the French colonial word griot, because that's what it is. It's, mm-hmm, a French colonial word. The indigenous term is jolly.
Jolly.
D as in David, mm-hmm, J as in joke, E-L-I, mm-hmm, jolly.
Jolly.
Right? He comes from a family of jollies. Now, he basically, how do we find out about Jope in the West? Well, one, you have the Ghanaian scholar by the name of Joseph B. Danqua. Is the one that
Ghana.
Really starts. He starts,
mm-hmm,
yes, the Ghanaian scholar,
mm-hmm,
the great Ghanaian scholar, starts talking about him. And then our master teacher, who I'll get to in a second, Nana John Henry Clark,
Ashe.
Gets a hold to his work.
Yes.
He gets a hold to his work, taking it to Jope's first work, which was his PhD dissertation that actually got refused,
mm-hmm,
was Nations Negres en Culture. Right? This,
mm-hmm,
was written in 1955,
mm-hmm,
by Presence Africaine. It was written first. Doc
Dr. Clark gets a hold of this and say, whoa, hold up. Well, who is this brother right here? Right? 4 years later, Jope writes The Cultural Unity of Negro Africa. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm looking at I got the original copy right here. That's what it was called in 59, right? Mm-hmm. The Cultural Unity of Negro Africa, right? So it is through Dr. Clark that he says, okay, my colleague Dr. Ben been doing this work all along, but it was something different with this African. Because this African was not only Cheikh Anta Diop from Senegal, West Africa, was not only grounded in Egyptology. He was not only grounded in the linguistic aspects, foundations of African civilizations. He was into the hard sciences, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And never had we seen a contemporary African that was able to use what we call the soft sciences or the social sciences and the hard sciences, right? And messed the two of them in and was an unapologetic African, right? So much that Dr. Clark said, well, I got to do a little piece on him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
1974, Dr. Clark writes Cheikh Anta Diop and the New Light on African History. Now, this is the same year that Cheikh Anta Diop's book, which was in French, because him and his right hand, Théophile Obenga, and I'm going to get to him in a second, they needed to get this work translated for us. For Africans in the Western Hemisphere who have been colonized by the British, we need to be able to read it. Mm-hmm. So it was the great Mercer Cook. Mercer Cook was the chair department, the chair department of English chairman, right? And he translated Cheikh Anta Diop's book, The African Origin of Civilization. Myth, yes. Reality.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we got that. It's through Mercer Cook and Howard University.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this is when we begin to see, oh, wow. So when this symposium took place, the symposium you talked about, Baba, it was held in Cairo, Egypt. The specific dates was January 28th to February 3rd of 1974. Now, this is important, Baba, and I appreciate you bringing this up to lay this foundation. This is so imperative because what we had in 1964 was the United Nations Educational, Sociological, and Cultural Organization, for short, UNESCO, got together and said, hey, we're going to write an 8-volume work on African history, right? And we're going to do 8 volumes. Volume 1 is going to be prehistory. Volume 2 is going to be dealing with ancient civilizations of Africa and so on. I have them all in the permit job, my house of books, my library. I had to study them. I had to have them physically, the unabridged versions, for a reason, right? It is in Volume 2 in which Cheikh Anta Diop in the game, his right-hand man, Théophile Obenga, who is still with us.
That's right.
Who was actually in which our brother Sam Livingston, the former chair at Morehouse, who's still there, master teacher in Africana Studies, and Greg Carr and Mario Beatty, Valithia Watkins, all sat at the feet of Théophile Obenga at Temple while they were getting their PhDs, and he was teaching them Metonetia. I bring him up because he is a living legend. Yes. He is still with us.
Yes, he
is. I sat at his feet at San Francisco State when I was at Howard. I had to go see him. I had to go holler at him, and I got to holler at him for about a week, and he poured into me, and he whispered in my ear before I left, and he hugged me. He said, Haru, put as many tools into your skill set as possible so you can be ready for war.
That's right, Ashe.
This was 2005. Mm-hmm. Now check this out. So he brings a whole crew to this UNESCO conference in 1974. You have Jean Leconte. You have John Vaucouture, Cheikh Anta Diop, and Théophile Obenga. The book is called, they did a whole book on this symposium called The Peopling of Ancient Egypt and the Deciphering of the Maronite Script. So while Cheikh Anta Diop is hitting them over the head with this science and this melanin dosis test, we cannot forget it was his right-hand apprentice, Théophile Obenga, who was the master. And he actually, his actual lecture was to really, really put them in their place. And I'm talking about them. I'm talking about these Western Asians that we erroneously call Europeans, right? Because ain't no continent called Europe.
That's
so let's be clear about that.
Thank you.
Now, the title of this article this presentation was the genetic linguistic relationship between Egyptian and modern Negro African languages. So, Theophilo Banga, we're talking about 50 years ago exactly, 2.5 generations ago, they put this symposium on blast, shut them down. They had no critique, hit them with the melanidosis test, showing them through the blood that they basically was able to do this. Sheikh Adejo was able to do this on some of the mummies. They wouldn't let them get there.
That's right.
You hear me, Baba?
I hear you.
They wouldn't let them.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't let them, but the ones he did get, he was able to show phenotypically and through the blood work. We're dealing with an African people, since y'all want to use phenotype. You want to use phenotype? Let's get it. Mm-hmm. Then he unleashed Theophilo Banga on him.
Linguistics.
And he hit him with the languages to show the different languages and how it was tied. That what we're looking at is an African people who went all throughout Africa after the damn Christian emperors, Theodosius and Justinian, closed the last temples in Kemet, and Africans went everywhere throughout the continent. Most of them went out west. And this is where we get the ancient kingdoms of which you mentioned earlier, Baba.
Mm-hmm.
Ghana, Songhai, and Mali, yes. Right? A reification of that, right? So I'm saying this to say this becomes the beginning. Now, I'm making sure I'm very strategically that I'm not giving up what the lecture is going to be about this Friday. This Friday, two things are happening at the Kemet Club. The Kemet Club is in East Point, Georgia. The address is 2832 Church Street.
Mm-hmm.
That's in East Point.
That's right.
My brother, my fellow Africana, we went to Cornell together. He was there before me. He got to sit at the feet of the great James Turner and got his master's degree in Africana studies. My brother, R.K. Hodges, who is the co-executive director, I had to do it here, of the Black Achievement Fund.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't seen nothing like it. If you haven't been to the Kemet Club, you better be there Friday at 7 p.m.
I say.
Because he's going to get to talk about not just the Black Achievement Fund, but it's called the Kemet Club for a reason. And I ain't going to take his shine too much, but when I say this African ain't talking about it, this brother done got 118 acres. You don't hear me. He done bought 118 acres 2.5 hours from Atlanta, took me there, showed me all 118, and he's creating little Kemet. I'm going to leave it right there. He going to talk to y'all about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we were going to begin. But this lecture on Friday, we're going to be dealing with the founding of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations. We're going to be dealing with the founding of it, talking about the founders and how this thing materialized, how it came about. And I'm going to be having so many heavyweights in there, including yourself. This ain't really a lecture. Let me be clear. This is a conversation.
I say.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because y'all got something to offer. I'm a pup in this game. I only been studying 28 years. I just finished one lap. I got about 3 more laps to go before I leave here. So I know I'm going to have some master teachers sitting at the feet. I know my Baba, Nathaniel Norman, Pop,
mm-hmm.
he told me he going to be there. Now, this living legend, I'm very honored, because I was the last student to leave Temple University with a PhD with his name on my doctoral dissertation as my dissertation chair. Greg Carr is my committee member. Mario Beatty on my dissertation. So if you, I'm just crumbs compared to the feet I set at. And so Baba Norman is going to be in the place. And we're talking about somebody in the 60s that was at City College with June Jordan, which was at Tony Medina and Leonard Jeffries. So he's a deep well of African thought. So we're going to have him in the place, have this conversation, and then we're going to basically, I'm going to have an information and question and answer session about the upcoming 2025 ASCAT Southern Regional Conference that's taking place January 24th to the 26th next year in Columbus, Georgia. And I'm gonna take a breath after I say this last sentence and let you get something in. It's going to be in Columbus for a reason.
That's right, Dr. Clark.
It's going to be in Columbus for a reason. Mm-hmm. While we know
Nana Clark was born in Union Springs, Alabama. Those that know, when you cross that state line, the first city you hit in Georgia is Columbus. This is where he was raised. This is where he's buried. So on the 24th or the 26th, in our conference, the theme is the wisdom, teachings, and deep thought of John Henry Clark, past, present, and future.
Hear me now.
Mm. So on Friday, you know how we do it, mm-hmm. Ask At.
Yes.
The community welcome us.
That's right.
We welcome the community, and we're going to party. We're going to mm-hmm. be live. We're going to do what Africans do. We're going to convene space on Saturdays.
It will be
the lectures all day.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, we'll have a tour. We're going to do Dr. Hood, who's one of on the planning committee, our mm-hmm. master teacher, Dr. Hood. He's mm-hmm. going to have a lecture himself I can't wait to take notes, because of his personal relationship with Dr. Clark, because that's what he is. Mm-hmm. That's what he lives. That's the work that he does there. And he's going to take us on a tour. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get an Africana tour in Columbus, and we're going to end it up by going to the gravesite of Nana John Henry Clark so we can pay libations and pay homage to him.
Yes.
So family, that's what we're dealing with Friday. So we'll get to really, really unleash it. I won't be so much truncated with the time or whatever, but I want to be mindful to move over. But I got a whole lot to say about a whole lot when it comes to asking. So, yeah, brother, that's what's going on there.
All right. Well, I tell you, we need to take a break. When we come back from this break,
yes, sir.
We're going to open up the phone lines. Well, first we're going to listen to some more of Dr. Heru. And, man, I can't wait. And then
I'm so excited. I hope I get some calls in.
Oh,
if
yeah.
not, I can feel the space. I can feel the space.
Oh no,
space,
no, we
I
got
calls
already,
in.
Dear brother. We got calls already. So and these callers know what to do. Hit star twice and get into it. But I'm going to take a break right now. I'm going to play a little for Brother Roy Haynes, who made his transition the other day. He was 99 years old. As I said, he's been over 600 recordings. He's played with the greatest of jazz artists. So numerous, I don't want to begin to name, because I don't want to leave nobody out. So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're talking today with Brother Heru Septeparra, and we're talking about ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, in our Southern Region Conference coming up in January 24th through the 26th. Brothers and sisters, we'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
That big hand, it was playing with Stan Getz, but that big hand was for Roy Haynes. 99 years old, passed away yesterday. There's a picture of him where he plays with Charlie Mingus on bass, Thelonious Monk on piano, and Charlie Parker, Bird, on saxophone. No recording of that particular jam session, but the picture says a thousand words. Brothers and sisters, hope you enjoyed it, and may the ancestors be pleased with Brother Roy Haynes and the work that he has done. There's so many, and just like our guest mentioned, Ishrish Muhammad, you know, and I remember listening to him, and so many other great jazz artists. So we're going to get back to the conversation with my brother, Dr. Hiru Satapara, and talking about ASCAC and the Southern Regional Conference in January, honoring Dr. John Henry Clark, who is, for me, one of my favorites. I mean, my consciousness and knowing who I am and understanding our history was listening to cassette tapes of Dr. John Henry Clark. And one of the highlights of my life, and I've said this a number of times on this program, beside the birth of my daughters and my grandsons and so forth, was I had the honor at the Indiana Black Expo to sit at the feet and have lunch with Dr. John Henry Clark. That's right. It's just been an honor. And so let's get back to the discussion. In fact, at that conference, is really Indiana Black Expo that year. I got to figure out the year, something in the early 90s when it really happened, because it was phenomenal. Muhammad Ali was there because they have a boxing program there, and see Muhammad Ali again. Khalid Abdul Muhammad did a presentation. Tupac. I mean, this is something that's just phenomenal, you know? Like I said, and I had the opportunity.
Was that in Indianapolis, sir?
Yes, it is. Indianapolis. Yeah. Beautiful people, man, I tell you. Just fantastic. The Indiana Black Expo. So we're going to open up the phone lines, and so but first, once again, tell us about the importance of this presentation this Friday.
Yeah, that's well, thank you for that. Just real quickly, I just wanted to thank you for, you know, I'm always about honoring the ancestors on a quotidian or a daily basis, so I had not got the message about the ancestor Roy Haynes. So as I was on hold, you know what I was doing. I was putting him in the calendar, only to find out when you mentioned Boston, he actually was born and raised where I, the ancestors, took me when I started my journey to get these little pieces of paper, what I call academic toilet paper. It started in Roxbury, right? It started in Roxbury Community College, because I went there to get my associate's degree. That's where I started, which is the only institution of higher learning where predominantly Black people go to school out of whole New England, from Maine all the way down to Rhode Island. So the ancestors put me there for a reason, because I got to sit at the feet of my Baba, Tony Vandermeer, Menelik Vandermeer, and also one of the architects, one of the pioneers of the Black arts movement, Askia Torre. So I got to sit at his feet for 2.5 years while I was at there. So there's that connection between me and Roy Haynes. So thank you for that, brother. The importance for ASCAC, period. I'll get to talk about the lecture, but an understanding, we're going to go ahead and lay this roadmap out on Friday to give us an understanding that we're in perfect times. These are not times for us to hold our head down. These are not times for us to pout. These are not times to be mad about no election or anything like that. It's time for us to be clear.
Yes.
Because just like Africans were when the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations actually began to convene space, right? Because it was on February 26th of 1984 when over 500 Africans got together in Los Angeles for the first conference. This was in 84, and that was the first annual Ancient Egyptian Studies Conference, right? So once that began, This was ushering in work that had been going on for the last 12 or 13 years behind the scenes with Anderson Thompson and Jacob Carruthers and John Henry Clark and other individuals that were really, really doing this work. And the culmination, ASCAP becomes the culmination, because we have to realize when ASCAP was coming about, we had the great Richard D. King, our African-centered psychiatrist that had the Sangoon Institute in L.A. You had brothers, Baba Asa Hilliard was doing his work here in the South, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and Dr. Jeffrey was doing their work up in the Northeast, right? We had work being done on all regions, the North, the South, and the East, and the West. So this becomes the culminations of Africans saying, you know what? We have to reconstruct, right? Put this European historiography, or what Anderson Thompson calls Sambo historiography, on its head and be able to tell our story from an African center. Now, this is important because when you look at the General History of Africa, 8 volumes, one would say, well, what was wrong with that? We had 8 volumes. They spent all this money. UNESCO's, we had 8 volumes. They did the history. The problem is it was multicultural. And Sheikh Anta-Joke knew that. Theophilabenga knew that. Jacob Carruthers knew that. Anderson Thompson knew that. Asa Hilliard knew that. Linda Jeffries knew that. Dr. Dan knew that. Dr. Clark knew that. Even Milana Karingo, who was one of the founding members, knew that. So they say, ah, you know what? We're going to establish an African World History Project.
That's right.
And we want to do a 10-volume work that is going to alleviate all this multicultural mumbo-jumbo. How you going to get Arabs who are still benefiting from African culture financially through tourism? Because when you look at Africa and North Africa, you can't find an African leader after they used Barack Hussein Obama to kill the one leader who loved African people, and that was Gaddafi. Let's be clear. So when you're looking at at North Africa, you're looking at Arabs.
That's right.
And you're looking through the conquest of Islam. They came and they actually destroyed African culture only to call this on. But see, we've been doing work. Our foot has been on their neck for 2.5 generations, that you at least got some of them that may lean a little bit. I'm talking about maybe the tour guides or whatever, but in terms of the state, they ain't trying to get up off that, but we don't need them. Because what ASCAP has done in this work with 2 generations now, this is 40 years now, we only have one living active member, and that's Leonard Jeffries. And he's a triple OG right now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
So the need for this resurgence that is not just happening here in the southern region. This work is going on in our different regions on the West Coast. We got the Western region. We got the Mid-Atlantic region. Mm-hmm. We got the Eastern region and the Southern region. There's a resurgence. There's a rebellion. And if I may say this, it's tied to ASCAP, but this is important. In terms of Africans being here in the Western Hemisphere, it has been cyclic. This memory, you throw away that road history. Mm-hmm. Our memory, it's been cyclic. Think about this. When chattel slavery ended, and it was Africans who ended it, when they walked off them damn places and chose to basically bear arms so they can get their own freedom, think about what happened. They invoked the end of chattel slavery. We only had 13 years to try to make something of this societal cesspool, the settler colony you call the United States of America. And in 13 years, 22 Africans were in Congress. In 13 years, what did they do? They passed the law. That thing we talk about, public education, right. Africans did that during that time. They doing that reconstruction, they did that. But guess what? There was basically a compromise in 1877 in which Africans went back to the same societal mumbo-jumbo through legal segregation, what I like to call the American apartheid system called Jim Crow. So from 1877 to 1964, with the passage of another civil rights bill, another one, there was one in 1875, we have what? There's been cycles. So from 65
64 to 1977, Africans trying to move and do something with this thing. Then the white violence comes. 40 years later, the early 20th century, Africans mobilize again. We call them the Harlem Radicals. Their big brother was Hubert Henry Harrison, that old unapologetic Negro who was a master reader, a voracious reader, didn't get any formal education, but taught at Columbia University. And who was his little brother? Who was his little brother? Marcus Garvey, A. Philip Randolph, Richard B. Moore, and Cyril Brick, the brothers from Barbados and St. Nevis, the Caribbean, who ended up starting the African Blood Brotherhood. They was boot stomping so much that the United States government hired this old cross-dressing cracker by the name of J. Edgar Hoover when it wasn't even called the FBI. And he's the one that got Garvey up out of here and got Garvey and sent him right down the street where I taught for 8.5 months right in the penitentiary.
Right here down the street.
Are you
right here in Atlanta.
Come on, Baba. So this is happening in the early 20th century. So then we get another 40 years of white folks on our neck. Lynching at its highest in the early 20th century. In East St. Louis is the most horrific riot. And let's be clear when we use that word riot. We talk about white folks going out there killing black folks just because they feel black folks ain't got no business being here. It's the language. So that riot in 1917 in East St. Louis. And then 2 years later, even more voracious one in Chicago. And then they called 1921 the Blood Summer because these crackers was just killing our ancestors all over this settler colony, just killing them. And what happened? 40 years, 30, 40 years later, we began to mobilize again with the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Hear me now. Hear me now. And what happens right after the mobilization? White violence. And it puts us right where we are right now. They've been on our neck. They've been on our necks using legislation, the Rockefeller, to say, oh, caught you with some powder cocaine, white boy. Ah, we give you 1 to 5 years. Brother, we caught you with 5 rocks of crack cocaine. 5 to 25 years, B. Using legislation. I'm saying, brother, I only used 1865. We can take this thing back. There's 2 scholars. These are Ashkenazi European scholars, Klinkner and Smith. It was the great James Turner that put that book in my hand in grad school called An Unsteady March. And these white boys go all the way back to 1676 with Bacon's Rebellion and showed when Africans tried to convene space with indigenous folks to get their own freedom, the House of Burgess, which was the governing body of Britain for British North America, said, oh, we're separating all this now. Enslavement will only be an African institution only. Ain't nobody else getting enslaved. We ain't dealing with no indentured service. We ain't doing that. It's going to make it only African so we can make sure that y'all know y'all ain't them. And ever since 1676, there's been an unsteady march. And every time we tried to progress, even if it's under a facade, like the POTUS election, even if it's under a facade and it just seemingly looks like progression, we have been met with the same thing every 30, 40, or 50 years, and that's white violence. So guess what? We're in a beautiful time now. Ain't no pouting. Ain't no being mad. I hope we clear. There's a lot of Negroes who too busy trying to be European that wasn't clear. There's a whole lot of Negroes using the social media and ain't reading nothing but what they put the caption on, ain't read a book, a paragraph, and making decisions that adversely affects everybody that looks like us. But see, now the line has been drawn, African. It's war. It is war. Dr. Clark said, don't get mad. Don't get mad. Get smart. Don't get mad. Get smart. So it's war. So I'm on fire right now. I'm so happy things planned out the way they do because we got work to do collectively we can get free. Because I believe we can win.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt we can win. It's already done. Yes, sir. No doubt. Brothers and sisters, we're on the African Perspectives. We're talking with my dear brother with ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations in the Southern Region, having a conference January 24th to the 26th in Columbus, Ohio. In Columbus, Georgia.
I wish.
In Columbus, Georgia.
The Ohio State University.
Right. And but this Friday at the Kemet Club, 2835 Church Street in East Point, Georgia, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., we're going to have conversation, presentations and conversations about ASCAC, the history of ASCAC, and how we all can get involved. So I'm going to be there. You be there. Hit star twice. Let you in. Brother Jay.
Hey, OC.
Hey.
Good morning to you and your guests.
Thank
Listen,
you.
I've had the opportunity to go to a couple of ASCAC conferences up at City College in New York. They were very interesting. I had joined for a time, but then I just left it. But you know, your guest made an interesting comment, and I hear the comment a lot. But you know something, to be honest with you, I've never heard anybody really define what do they mean when they say we go in.
That's a good question. Are you done, brother?
Oh, one last thing. I got a good laugh for y'all. It seems like the white man gonna get reparations before us.
I heard this. Go ahead, Jay.
Did you hear that cracker yesterday?
Yeah.
That
yes,
we
sir.
Gonna give
yes,
repair to all of those people that were mistreated with DAI and all of that.
Right.
Now you know we laughing about it, and it's not funny because it just goes to show how we've been marginalized as a people, and we don't realize the danger that, you know, we face over these next couple of years, because unfortunately we for some reason think that it's gonna be all right till we get caught up in crises like this, which it may become or it may not become. But the reality is maybe now we'll wake up and see what your brother may explain about how we win, because I want to hear his analogy, and I definitely would like to respond, because I hope it's the same way I see it as we win.
All right, Jay.
All right, my brother.
Okay, thank you, well, brother. I appreciate you so much, Baba Oshi.
Yes.
I'm a guest on your show, but we having a dialogue, brother. Would you like to say a little piece on that before I speak to it? Because, I mean, if you got something to say,
yeah.
I don't want to, you know.
No, okay. Let me move you
out of the way.
No, I hear you. Thank you, dear brother.
Yes, sir.
I remember, you know, having developed the consciousness of the 60s and even kind of fell by the wayside a little bit like everybody else did in the 70s and 80s and so forth, but understood, too, that we're African. And always looked at the situation here in America, because we didn't want to be African. We wanted to be American. We wanted this society to treat us fairly and justly, hire us. Please let us go to your schools. Please let us live in your neighborhoods. Please. You know, this amalgamation and integration kind of thing, you know. But for me, I always looked at it, maybe this is the person, maybe this is the administration that'll make us understand there is no place for you here. Now let's come together, close ranks, pull our resources, and do for ourselves, and then make that connection to Africa, and eventually let's move back home, because there's no place for us here. And said that with various administrations, and particularly Ronald Reagan's administration. You know, we said that in various other administrations, and we truly have said that with Donald Trump's administration. I believe this time it will happen, because he has been who he is, and the people who he's appointing are that way. And so, yeah, we will win, because we'll go home. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Baba. And I appreciate, what was the brother's name who asked the first question? I had the first comment.
Brother Jay.
We appreciate you, Brother Jay, first of all, for coming on, brother, and asking. the question that you asked. I'll answer it the best way I think is most effective based on what it is that we're dealing here in 2024. So if we think about, in order for you to really feel you can win anything in life, a race, a scholarship, or what have you, there's one aspect on your body that has to be reconvinced that you can win, and it's your mind. It has to be in your mind that you believe you can win that race. The battle has always been on African bodies. We see that even today with these cops. We see it. We see it happening every day on how they treat our sisters and our brothers. We see that, right? But it is that mind, that invisible weapon, in which if they can keep you asleep, if they can keep that African memory bank dim and turned off, you not only know if you coming or going, because we are humans and people are about preservation of life, regardless of your political, social, or economical circumstance, you need to survive. And if you don't, if they got your mind, they can put some crumbs in front of you to make you think that you coming up. Throw some drugs in the community, having a miseducation, and you think you winning because you striving for something that's going to help you individually as opposed to collectively. So it is a battle on the mind. When I say we can win, oh, I have many tentacles on that. But I want to deal with what's most important in this aspect is we have to get mentally free. The epitome, the great exemplar of an institutional builder, Carter Godwin Woodson, the second African to get a PhD.
Yes.
In history from Harvard. Left the coal mines, finished high school at 20, and was clear from day one by sitting at the feet of an elder, Oliver Jones, and these elders couldn't read or write, but they had sense. And they said, they tasked him as a child. Go by those newspapers. Come on back here and read and tell us what it is. So even though they couldn't so-called read this bastard language called English, he was infusing the minds to have them to be able to critically think that even if they couldn't read the article, they knew how to move as Africans. So Carter G. Woodson said in 1933, the problem is, even with all his degrees, a master's degree from the University of Chicago, a PhD from Harvard, he said, listen, first of all, don't accept no white money. I ain't accepting nothing to do all these institutions I'm building, but we got to deal with the miseducation of the Negro. When I say get free, we got to get mentally free. In this system, this social structure, what do they mean to us has been at all out war. There's a great book by Sister Leslie T. Fenwick. It's called Jim Crow's Pink Slip, The Untold Story of Black Principle and Teacher Leadership. Do you know what this book is about? They say, okay, Negroes, you want integration? No problem. We're going to send your baby to hostile environments, like you said, Baba showed you, these white schools. We're going to bust them out there, let them deal with racism on another level, and we also going to do another thing. See, we see what y'all doing in the 50s. We see what y'all was doing in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. We see what y'all was doing in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. Y'all had control of educating your own babies. So guess what they did? Guess what this government did? They got rid of hundreds of thousands of black superintendent positions, black principal positions, black teacher positions, and basically got rid of them positions and put in the place white folk. Thus came the continuation of the miseducation of the Negro. So when I say free, we got to get mentally free first. We still fighting over been calling ourselves African. Mm-hmm. We're still fighting. Mm-hmm. Negroes will fight you now. They will fight you now. Right? So when I say free, Greg Carr has basically laid out 7 principles of the Africana Studies framework, in which we're dealing with the social structure, what I just said, dealing with governance. Who are we to each other? Looking at cultural meaning making. Looking at movement and memory, looking at science and technology. But that last one, is from the Greek poet Sonia Sanchez in her 1974 play. But how do it free us? So I'm very clear that I know, based on the decisions that I saw, a minute of Negroes who did no reading. If I did a class on Project 2025 and it made it mandatory for us to read it, all 922 pages, we will be dealing with a different Negro. We will be mobilizing the way we did before we got integrated. Mm-hmm. So, Brother Jay, when I say we winning, I'm speaking we got to get our mind right. We got to get this cesspool out of it, the final frontiers, which I'll be dealing with next year. The book is coming. That final frontier, you know what the final frontier is, right? They're killing us with this spoon and this fork. We're fighting for liberation. Talking all this, what we talking about. But the one thing we ain't doing is liberating our stomach,
our health,
our liver,
health,
our colon,
yeah,
and our health.
Health.
And that, so we got to win mm-hmm. on many avenues, culturally, mm-hmm. politically, land, intellectually, dietary. We got to, it's tentacles out there. I could talk on this for 4 or 5 hours, but that's what I mean, brother, when I say about us winning. Deal with that mind, that first mind.
Okay, so I love what you said. Let me ask you this. What is the final destination when you win? Is the final destination sovereignty or something else?
That's a great question, brother. So for me, it's very simple. The Republic of New Africa was trying to do it. The Republic of New Africa said, give us 5 states down here and leave us the hell alone. It's very simple. Self-determination. Self-determination.
Well, you know
that's my answer.
One of the things, I don't mean to cut you off, but one of the things that when I hear brothers back in the day with the Nation and the Brothers of New Africa, I mean,
yes,
I don't know if there's really been no serious discussions when they talk about give us 5 bases of land in this country. My only concern in all of that is, are they going to give you something to help you protect it? You know, like they
that's,
give you crazy
yes,
and things of that nature. Because, see, the reality is something that we honestly don't deal with, and this is something that those of us who have studied realize, we could build any and everything. We could govern ourselves. But it boils down to one thing. Can we protect ourselves?
And see.
And no pressure will never allow you to protect yourselves within his midst. So
what do you see as the solution is, brother, with that? Based on that, Jay, I hear you.
I want you to answer your own question.
If that's the case, what do you feel the solution would be, sir?
My solution is twofold in a sense. My solution is to go forward maybe in that particular experiment, but be able to protect yourself or make the ultimate sacrifice to blow it all up if you have to, like the Iranians and the Saudi Arabians tell America, you come for my oil, we blowing this shit up. My final solution and what I would hope for is that we would identify someplace home and work with the government back home and build, and hopefully the government back home will be in a position to protect or use the resources that they have to gain the weaponry to protect. But no, my final solution, I don't think, is here. I would like it, in a sense, to be here and there, and to be able to go back and forwards and work with one another to build a better African person. Because you and I both know the majority of Negroes ain't going back home.
Good.
They don't even want to go visit.
Good.
And I tell you from someone who's done visit, it's the most beautiful place in the world. It's the most peaceful place in the world if you have certain amenities. And that's just where I'm at. But, you know, whenever I hear brothers and sisters talk about here in America, give me five land or all of that, to me, I laugh at it. Because I never, ever, 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 ever hear them talk about how I'm going to build it and protect it from this beast. And you and I both know there ain't nothing in the world worse than a jealous cracker. Nothing in the world. That's why we don't have institutions now. Can I ask you a question, brother?
You made the statement twice. But you know, there's a book on it. Have you studied the Republic of New Africa? Because I'm hearing you make the statement twice. You said you don't know. So, and I don't know if you're using that in generalization. Have you studied the Republic of New Africa and what the whole thing? No, I've read stuff on it, but I haven't gone in depth on it. I'm with you, Baba. Now this is important, Jay. This is an important point. This is the reason why I raised that with you. And this is not just to you, brother. This is all of us. Hold on, brother. Give me a second. This is why memory is important. Memory means we go back and fetch it. We read so we can get lessons. Now, some like people like to say the mistakes they made. I don't believe any of them mistakes. There was lessons to be learned. We read what our ancestors did and what they tried to do. And if it was land or what have you, we must become voracious readers. We must become studiers of that memory. Because when we do that research, when we search again, we are able to come up with solutions only when we basically take ourselves through that genealogical trekking of understanding what happened. And so what happens so much is a lot of us, we have fragmented memory. We hold on to certain things that fit us, and we don't do the real heavy lifting. That real work, that real reading, and reading all of it and spending the time to read it over the years and the decades and taking the time to do so. So when you do decide to what it's going to look like, you have all of those exemplars of those that came before us. So that's my point. And not just to you, I'm saying this even to myself. This is where the real work comes in, because a lot of the things, our solutions that we want, we can find them on those that came before us who attempted those, even if they failed at it. That's the point I'm trying to make. So we got work to do with that, because the answers are there. And we don't have to say we don't know. We go about knowing by reading and continuously reading and critically reading and having a critical analytical analysis of the work, so we'll know how we move forward. Because at this day and age, what they have done with this system, Dr. John Henry Clark said it best. In 1492, when Isabella and Ferdinand brought the Castile nation and it became an empire in Spain, and they sent him off to the West, he didn't know where the hell he was going. He thought he was going to India. But what Dr. Clark talks about in his book, Christopher Columbus and the African Holocaust, is that not only in 1492 did they basically colonize the Western Hemisphere, they began to colonize information about the world, which means that is our job, to understand how that colonization takes place. And we have to be very serious, critical thinkers and learners and workers, to understand what happened in order for us to get free. And the first way we get, you can't get a person to get free if they don't know if they coming or going. They can't even call themselves Africans. Like you said, if you can't get nobody to go to their own motherland when everybody else is doing it, we're having an issue with their psyche, cognitive dissonance in their minds. But we don't throw them away. We don't throw them away. Paul Robeson said it best. It is the responsibility of the conscious one to bring the unconscious into consciousness and make the unconscious understand how they got unconscious in the first goddamn place. That is our job. So I'm a very solution-oriented African.
I say,
when I say we can win, I mean that. I move anybody that knows me. I move on that principle the same way Martin Robeson Delaney did it, the same way W.B. Du Bois did it, the same way as Frederick Douglass did it, the same way as Ida B. Wells did it, the same way as Mary Church Terrell did it, the same way as Francis Ella Watkins did it, the same way as Francis Lewis Hamer did it. When I say win, I ain't got to be here to witness it. I don't have to be here, but I need to know when I'm gone, I had a drop in that liberation. So
lay the foundation.
I don't believe. I know we can win.
We just got to convince. And it ain't easy bringing Africans into the light. One of my incarcerated scholars gave me a poem. He gave me a quote, blew me away. He said, when you choose to be the light in the world, you must first be prepared to burn. A whole lot of Negroes don't like the heat. But if you the light, and the way that John Henry Clark wrote that about Sheikh Anta Diop, in the new light on African history, we got to be illuminated in this.
I say.
And we got to know that we can win. I say, oh.
I say. You know, the Exodus in the Bible never happened. There were conferences and so forth. It was proven it never happened.
Yes, sir.
The Exodus never happened. But yet, Easter time, they'll show the Ten Commandments movie, and people agree and think that this is historical because they understand and they think that the Bible and what was written is historical. But it never happened. But an Exodus must happen. A Exodus must happen for us. We must get up ass up out of here and everywhere else throughout the diaspora that we are and go home. Not go home like the brothers and sisters went home to Liberia with an attitude, well, I think I'm better than you because I've been exposed to white folks for the last 300 years. And then the Africans thought, well, I'm better because I wasn't enslaved, but you were colonized, you know, and I'm better than you. No, we go home with the knowledge of what we're going to bring and what they have. We work together. It is ludicrous to think that Africa has all these resources. Even though Africa has been plundered, raped, and pillaged for hundreds of years by these sons of a bitches, and yet it still has more gold, more diamonds, and so forth. And we make sure we kicking all those sons of bitches out. The Arabs. We kicking the British out. We kicking the Koreans out. We kicking all of them out. The Koreans are trying to get back the Indians. The Indians are trying to get back Uganda. Just like in that movie, Mississippi Masala. Mm. I don't know if you've ever seen Mississippi Masala, but check it out.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes,
good
sir.
Good movie.
Yeah, you talking about with Denzel?
Yes.
With Denzel?
Yes.
Yeah, Denzel. I forget the other sister. Indian sister. Yeah, Denzel and the Indian sister.
Yeah. Good, deep movie.
Yeah, a Mobile. Were they in Mobile? Were they in the Gulf Coast, right? They was in the Gulf Coast.
Yes. They were in the Gulf Coast.
In the South. Yes, sir.
And, of course, they had the liquor store. They had run of the liquor stores and the motels like they truly, really do. You know? So I'm saying.
This is, you know, Baba, you and Brother Jay bring up very important pieces. And this is the dichotomy, right? Meaning you're going to have some Africans who are ready to go home to the motherland, right? And then you're going to have Africans that say, hey, it was my ancestors that basically had their hand in the development of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have that. That's a plea, right?
That's a plea. I understand.
But we have that, right? We have that. So and depending on what angle you on or what sphere you are in looking at that, see, I use the mindset of what Martin Luther King said we have to be about, and we got to be about nowness. So what do I mean by that? It was actually Martin Robeson Delaney who said it first in 1852 in his book, The Condition, Elevation, Immigration, and the Destiny of Colored People in the United States. When he wrote this 1852 book, it is in there we see, he said that we are a nation within a nation. And some 50 years later, Marcus Garvey uses that same term. You see the genealogy, the connection. They both are saying, let's go back to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Delaney in 1859 is in Nigeria with Robert Campbell. They're in Nigeria negotiating.
Mm-hmm.
The king is like, all right, come on, y'all can make it happen. So much that they even wrote a book on it. That title of the book is Search for a Place. Black Separatism in Africa, 1860. And the only reason it didn't come to its fruition, because there were many attempts before that. We can go back to Paul Cuffey in the 1700s.
Right.
We can talk about that radical Negro who used to carry his pistol on a pulpit. The Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. All of them we had so many Africans saying, let's go back.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert Campbell and Martin Robeson Delaney had something that was going to happen, and what ended up happening? 1 year later, the U.S. Civil War. That's what abandoned it. So you have individuals there, but we are a nation
within a nation, and Dr. Clark to add his addendum on it, searching for a nationality. That's what this settler colony. That's the troubling. And because we have been indoctrinated through religion, because we've been indoctrinated through diet, because we've been indoctrinated through education, because we've been indoctrinated on so many levels of the institutions that Neely Fuller talks about, all nine of those institutions, we have to be clear to say, listen, to hell with uniformity. Okay, you a Buddhist. Okay, you a Muslim. Okay, you a Christian. But we all catching hell for one thing.
Black.
We got African blood.
That's right.
We got African blood.
That's right.
So we need to say to hell with uniformity, and we need to have unity.
That's right.
This is where we are right now. We have to be unified. And when we're not unified, this is how they separate us, and they hitting us all over the head with everything, including that final frontier, talking about that food and food. You know, our brothers don't want to hear that talk. I've been doing this work. I carry two hats. I'm a student of Africana study, pure and pure, and I'm a student of Africana holistic health, and I've been walking the same walk at the same time doing this work, but we running. You can't run from it, because guess what? How the hell you going to think clearly? I don't care how many books you read. We got some brilliant master teachers out here who didn't eat right. I ain't talking about that, though. I'm talking about what we can do now, because from your esophagus to your stomach, to your small intestine, to your colon, to your pancreas, to your gallbladder and your liver, that is known as your enteric nervous system. On the walls of Kemet, I write about it in my dissertation. They're talking about enemas is associated with Jehuti, and how the inside of that whole enteric nervous system is the second brain. And if you're eating caca, you're thinking caca, because it is that enteric nervous system that is feeding the high brain, the one that sits between your two shoulders. And we have to conquer that. This ain't a question of eating meat or no meat. You got Negroes with PhDs and ain't had a bowel movement in 4 days and don't think it's a problem. This is an issue, and this is where they've been killing us. This ain't about eating meat or no eat, because that argument has already been settled. I don't even argue that. Ain't nothing to argue. There's no fiber in dead flesh. There's no fiber in dead flesh whatsoever. And if it's seafood or otherwise dead flesh, it has no energy. It does not move without assistance. And most people who eat a whole lot of it ain't eating the things to assist the movement. So what happens over time?
That's right. That's
brother right. Grabs his belly. Oh, you know, man, I'm putting on that weight with old age. No, brother. You full of shit, literally.
Literally.
That's 40 pounds. That's 40 pounds of dead fecal matter in your colon, B. That's what you walking around with. I weigh lighter now than I did when I was 16. And that was 40-something years ago, or 30-something years ago. The point is, they getting us, man. This ain't a critique on our people. I love my people. I love them so much that my business as a certified holistic nutritional counselor, I position it in a way that I meet my people where they are, because I can't do like the old vanguard and say, you got to do this and you got to do this and you got to do this and you got to leave this alone. How the hell are you going to tell somebody who's been eating death for 50 years they got to do it that way and go cold turkey? That's like telling somebody who's strung out on heroin or meth or any other drug that they got to go cold turkey. No, you meet Africans where they are, with their reading, with their diet, with their That's understanding, right. with their miseducation, whatever, to bring them into the light. Because what? When you choose to do that, you got to be prepared to do what, Baba Oshie? Yeah. Burn.
That's right. I say, we have another caller. Brother Marcus.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Greetings to the guests. Greetings to your guests. Just to piggyback on what Brother G said, you hearing me, right?
Loud and clear,
Bob. Hearing me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead. Go ahead, Brother Marcus. Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, 400 years, you know, is long enough to know if there was any human relationship to be worked out with these people in this country. We could have done it in 400 years. So it's evident that these people don't want to work nothing out with black people unless we're at the bottom. See, in that book that Marcus Garvey wrote, The Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey, there is a little chapter, paragraph in there that says, the aptitude of the Negro to disobey orders coming from himself. Mm-hmm. And what he said, he said, look, he said, in order to correct these black folks here, you got to remove them from the society and put them in another environment where you have some control over these people, over our people. In this society, we don't have no control over our people here. If you try to correct them, they go to the system and use the system as a club over your head. You see, so there is no solution for black people here in this country. History has demonstrated it. Because again, as I said, if there was any human relationship to be worked out with these people, we could have done it in 400 years. So we must pivot to 180 degrees to Africa, because that is a solution for black people, where the mass majority of our people reside. And if we lose Africa, we lose it all. If black people lose Africa, it's done. We're finished as a race.
Yes.
Because that is the price for black people. It's not America. It's not America, because this is the red man's land, and the red man still want his land back. But by us hanging out here with this white man, we are depriving the red man of his territorial integrity. We are depriving him of his land. And we are saying, oh yes, this is my land too. No, we are the tools that the white man used to build himself up. And when the carpenter doesn't give credit to the tools, he gives credit to himself. So black people, it is imperative to pivot to Africa, not America.
I say, right. Baba. You know, and thank you. You know, if I may, just in congruence with what you're saying, Baba, and keeping in alignment with what we've been talking about, and bringing up to the forefront again, our master teacher, Nana John Henry Clark. I remember I've watched this video time and time again, and he said so eloquently how he just takes his time, such a story, a memory storyteller, and he says, in order for the continent of Africa to be able to release itself from the fetters of what colonialism has done, with this so-called scrambled of Africa has done, what Walter Rodney calls the underdevelopment of Africa has done, Dr. Clark said, the one African, now we, as Pan-Africans, we need to all be thinking like this, but he said, it is that African that is born in America that is the brightest hope in order for Africa to get where it is. And he said, and he gave his explanation why. He said, think about it. Think about how the African was treated in America as opposed to Africans treated elsewhere. Now, this is not a contest. But the reason why maroonage was so rampant and on such a large scale in South America and Central America and the Caribbean is because those idiot enslavers would have one to two enslavers on a plantation of 500 Africans, restless Africans, and they were outnumbered, so that maroonage activity was so overt and so pervasive that they was able to do it. Well, these enslavers, these crackers here at this settler colony in the United States, I say, oh, no, we're not going to do that. They went to Barbados, and Barbados taught them how to breed. Barbados say, oh, y'all need to have some smaller plantations. That way you can have control over them. It didn't stop maroonage activity, but the horror that we had to deal with under that, trying to encapsulate our rebellious spirit. And the Africans here, we know this European, these sons and daughters of Britain, unlike anybody else knows them, we have basically continued to succeed and elevate on a small scale, regardless of this situation of this social experiment called America, and we continue to elevate ourselves.
We have the finances. We have the education to be able to do it. There is that one thing, that mind.
That's right, the mind.
That mind.
You're right. You're right. And I say this too. That's why in the Caribbean, right, before I came to this country, right, when I went to the U.S. Embassy to come to this country, we had a black immigration officer, U.S., black from the United States, a black U. And you know what he told us? He said, hey, you see those black people in here, don't associate with them because they are lazy. Now, this is a black man now, you know. So, you know, Amos Wilson said, in order for white supremacy to rule, they must recruit from the same group that they oppress. So they go recruit this Negro here and use this Negro to groom us before we come into this country. Say, look, you see them black folks there, don't associate with them because they don't want to make that, they don't want us to make that connection. You are right. And I close with this too. You see, you are right when you said this black person here in America is the most racially conscious black people on the planet because of the treatment dispensed by this European here and the black man here. You see, in the Caribbean, they use hypocrisy. They come and they smile at us and they say, But here, when you come here, they show you their true colors. So you are correct, brother. Keep on keeping on. Keep on keeping on, brother Oshie.
Thank you, brother Marcus. You have a blessed day, dear friend. Peace.
Ashe, Baba. Shanti Sana.
Brother Ted Lusk, are you with us?
Hey, yeah, I'm with you. And man, of all the days for me to be multitasking, Dr. Heru, first of all, let me just say it's such a pleasure to hear you again, sir. And since coming down into the Columbus, Georgia area, because I'm right here in Montgomery, Alabama.
So are you going to be there in January?
If all goes well, we're just a couple of months away. And so it's just a matter of getting myself together to be there. I mean,
yes, sir.
It's so close.
I'll be there.
Hey, Baba, just make sure you stay in contact. I'll give you my number. So if you need to get any information about the Ask At conference, let's make sure we get that to you, brother, okay?
Thank you so very much. And I'll just get it from Brother Oshie. And Baba,
yes,
this is a pleasure, as always, to listen and learn. Thank you so very much, Dr. Heru. Thank you so very much, Baba Oshie. Until
always.
Next time.
All right, dear brother. Thank you, brother Ted. Amen. He is a good brother. Doc, he is outstanding, man. He sends me information for years. All of these callers mostly have been with me for years. Who are you?
Ashe.
Who are you? Is this from across the pond? Our good brother?
How you doing? Can you hear me, brother?
We can hear you well.
It's not a great connection, I don't think, but we ain't got a great deal of time either, so I'm just going to get straight to
the point. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. We ain't got a lot of time, so I'm just going to get straight to the point. Great deal of information. Great deal of information. Baba Oshie.
Yes, Brother Paul.
I just want to, do I have your permission to push back slightly? I want to ask your guest a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Can you tell me, do you feel that you in America or the Africans in America?
He's from the UK.
So go. I was going to ask. I heard the accent. I'm going to ask him again, but please come with the question, brother. I'm going to ask what I need to ask you, and I'll answer the best way I can.
Absolutely. Do you in America, as African Americans, do you feel that your history of abuse, murder, kidnap, rape, and torture by Europeans was worse than those in South America, than those in the Caribbean?
That's a great question, brother. That's a great question.
Or those on the continent. Do you think you had some exceptional type of experience down there in America?
Got you. Great question. And what's your name again, brother?
Brother Paul.
My name is Paul.
Okay, and Paul, where in the UK specifically are you calling from, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm calling from East London, exactly.
East London, okay, beautiful. With that, first of all, brother, thank you for basically making that trek and letting your fingers do the walking, as we said back in the day with the phone. The answer is emphatically no. If you heard, I said a side piece, and then it allowed me to elaborate on this very quickly. See, for descendants, African descendants of enslaved Africans to argue on who was actually treated worse is such an asinine conversation to have, because what we do know is that the enslavement of our ancestors in over half of a millennium is the greatest crime against humanity. And we were all brought to the shores to build colonial empires, right? And we were brought by special invitation. So you will not get me, and I will hope any intellectual with some sense, to sit here and try to create a top 10 as if it was a music list or what have you on who was enslaved worse or whatever. First of all, ain't nobody done that work that deep to even have such an asinine conversation or to try to give an answer. But what the beauty, I flip it on his head. And from our pioneer scholars, Cedric James Robinson, the pioneer who wrote Black Marxism, The Roots of a Black Radical Tradition, who also wrote Forgeries of Memory and Meaning in his piece, Black Education of Black, Black Movements in America, in which I talked to my incarcerated scholars. I had them read that to show them, rather than talk about who had it worse, we need to find the commonality. As Africans, we have differences in the sense only that we have different colonial structures who have enslaved us. So we become either true Africans and our African selves in a foreign land, or we become Afropeans, be it in England, be it in the United States, be it in the Caribbean, even though they are basically predominantly African, let's be clear. None of them are free. They're all vassals. They wave the flag to either France or Britain or the Netherlands or otherwise. We flip it on its head and we say, what was the commonality? And when you read Cedric Robinson's Black Marxism, Black Movements in America, and all 40-plus books of the one who's kicking up dust real hard now, Gerald Horn, a great professor from the University of Houston, which you'll find out the commonality was maroonage. The commonality was banging against a system that was unjust. I don't care if it was petite maroonage, from slowing down the work, losing the farming tools, acting like feigning or acting like your back hurt, to grand maroonage, the grand maroonage, which is mean poisoning them, killing them, and running the hell away, never to come back. Those are only levels of our resistance. So I reject any conversation, and not saying you're saying that, brother, but for anybody to try to sit here and try to cater to who got that, that's kind of what Frederick Douglass talked about in one of his autobiographies. He said it would hurt his heart more than anything if he would watch enslaved Africans on the plantation fight each other. And guess why they were fighting? Because they was arguing on which one of their slave masters had the most money and had the most slaves and had the most power. So we not having that conversation. We're not talking about who was worse than the other. It was all the greatest crime against humanity. It was all responsible from basically doing what? It was responsible for undeveloping Africa, as Walter Rodney said. But the beautiful thing about that, as Malcolm said, the chickens are coming home to roost. Stephen Smith wrote a book called The Scramble for Europe. Young Africa on its way to the old continent. If you study all of the continents right now, and Europe is not a continent, it's Western Asia. Let's be clear. It ain't separated by no large body of land. But if you look at all the continents, the youngest of that continental Africa. Population is Africa. It's 30 years old. This is why the hell is taking place the way it is right now in this settler colony, and it's taking place everywhere. It's going crazy everywhere because they feel their time is running out. This is the reason why Trump and the boys are trying to dismantle the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, the Civil Rights Amendment. They're trying to basically even curtail and deal with what? The 19th Amendment, the women's right to vote, is they are at their last string. They acting up, they acting amok, but that's okay because there's enough of us that have been clear
from day one that has been doing that work from day one, and all we doing now is digging our feet and putting our hands in the trenches more deeper so we can be about those African values of communalism, cooperativeness, and collective, and we regurgitate, we defecate on those European values of individualism, competitiveness, and exploitation. It ain't no accident the damn acronym is ICE.
Hmm. All right. All right, Brother Paul.
Well, we're running to the top of the hour. I just want to ask your guest one last question. Probably haven't got time to deal with it. But your guest mentioned the term maroonage. Yeah. Is he referring, I'm not even clear what in what context he uses it, but is that in reference to the term maroons?
That's a great question. So Cedric Robinson uses the word maroonage specifically for those enslaved Africans in North America and being maroons. And those Africans in Central America, the term is cimarrone in Espanol, which if you translate to English, it's maroons. Black movements in America, brother, by the book, Black Movements in America by Cedric Robinson, he breaks it down.
That's great. That's great. I'm glad. You know, we ain't got enough time to go into it, but the next time you come on, I would love you to explore that, because I have especially because my parents are from Jamaica, and that is very interesting what you've just said. But there's a lot of things I'd like to take on board with that, because there's a lot of things which people don't know about the Maroons. Anyway, we'll deal with that.
Yes,
another
sir.
Time. Thank you.
All right.
And when
thank
I
you.
Come to East London, you just show me the way when I come to East
That's
London.
That's right, Brother Paul. Brother, hey, Paul, we are coming. Okay? Kwaku said we are.
Check.
Brother Irv, we are coming, Paul.
Absolutely.
All right, brother.
Absolutely. Take care.
Mama Nabantu.
Yeah, I thought I heard you say something about ASCAP conference is coming up at the 10 o'clock.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Can I give us 1 second?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Sister, we're going to my name is Haru Satepen Rahekumta. I am extremely honored to be able to do so this Friday at the Kemet Club. The address is 2835 Church Street.
I know about the Kemet Club. I just need to know what time.
I'm giving this. Bear with me, sis. It's at the Kemet Club in East Point. It's going to be from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And there's two things that's going to be taking place. We'll be having a conversation. I'll be talking about the historical overview on the foundations of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, ASCAT. And then the second part of it will be information and question and answers for the upcoming 2025 ASCAT Southern Regional Annual Conference in Columbus, Georgia.
Okay.
And that's this Friday from 7 to 10. And we're going to be there longer than that. We got the space for longer than that, but I just put it on the flyer for 7 to 9. I appreciate you.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a member of the club. So.
Ashe. Well, beautiful. Okay. I can't wait to see. What's your name again?
Mama Nabantu.
Mama Nabantu, I look forward. And I believe I hear your voice. I'm sure I've seen you around, but I look forward to seeing you there, definitely.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Queen Mother. Have an amazing one.
All right, Mama Nabantu. She's with the Pan-African Federalist Movement. She also
the
organizer of the Collard Green Festival.
Maybe rings the bell.
Yeah, the Collard Green Festival.
That That's how I know her. That's how I know her. That's how I know her.
Yep.
Collard Green Festival. I knew the name, and once I see her face, I know. Yep. I know exactly who I was speaking to.
That's right.
I say.
Listen, you.
We appreciate the Queen Mother, all that work she's doing.
Yes. Oh, most definitely, brother. Believe me. Any last words before I close out? I know I'm up already past the hour, but any last words, dear brother?
No, Abe, I love you, black man. Like I say, just keep doing what you do, elders, a long distance brother. You keep me on fire. The next lecture, the next time I'll come on, we're going to be dealing strictly with health. I know we said that last time.
Right.
But this thing unfolded, we're going to make it happen. And listen.
Let's get
everybody
you on here.
In, I love y'all, man.
Let's get you on here right after the Thanksgiving piece. Okay, going into so in between that Christmas shit and the Thanksgiving piece. Get you in there. You know, so.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We got to make it happen for a date.
For sure.
Hey, I love you, Baba.
I love you too, dear brother.
Tuned in, man.
All right.
I'll
see you on Friday. I'll be announcing this on Friday's program as well, of course. Okay? All right. Please listen. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko.
The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Abibi Vahardier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Bless you and see you on Friday. Peace.